Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, December the 26th. And today we're going to catch up with our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. We're going to talk a little bit about South Texas, specifically El Paso, a city right now that is, in, to say the least, in a bit of an emergency brought about by all of these people showing up at the border. So let me say hello to my friend George. George, you're looking happy. Did somebody win a football game here recently?
Yes, on Saturday my Cowboys won. Our Cowboys right. won.
Are these the and same Cowboys, people. The they same beat. Ones that I'm cheering for?
That's it.
Yeah, they did win. They did win that game. It was a back and forth game. I mean, it was exciting. It was an exciting game. It was a good game, actually. They don't get too many of those anymore, but it was an exciting game back and forth that they had to win. I mean, they had to win, especially after losing to Jacksonville. They really needed to win that game, so credit to them. What is crazy, George, now is that I think they play 17 games now, but they play it over such a long time. I mean, the Cowboys have a game this Thursday, and then they have another game right later.
They got two more to go.
So that means they're going to play how many games? 18 games? Did I miss a memo?
They are 11.
They're 12 and 4 now, right? So that's 16. 11 and 4.
Yeah, with two more to go.
Okay, so they will play 17. Okay. Well, I'm old enough to remember when they used to play 14.
Yeah. Yep, I remember.
And I'm also old enough to remember when the final game of the season was December 31st. Remember the Ice Bowl? The
right.
Cowboys and the Packers.
Right.
That was the NFL title, of course. But that was played on December 31st, 1967. So they've expanded the season, I guess, a little bit. And
my worry is that they're going to dilute it too much by expanding it too much. They expanded much more.
Yeah.
They're going to dilute it. And, I mean, a lot of people just don't pay attention to the NBA because there are so many games
right.
until the finals.
That's right, and I happen to be one of those. There's just so many, you know, what difference does a game in February make? I mean,
right.
You're still going to be in the playoffs. But if I could suggest something to the NFL in changing the schedule or how they do things, I think they should maybe look at what baseball has done. Baseball has three divisions.
There you go.
And the NFL has four divisions. But the problem with having four divisions is what you're seeing now with one of the divisions where the winner of that division may not even play 500 ball. You might have a 7-9 or 8-8 team. So that
in fact, I don't know if you saw the game last night.
I heard about it, yeah.
In Arizona and Tampa Bay.
Right.
Painful to watch at times. It really was painful.
Yeah, well, I also heard it was painful to watch. And this is, I guess, more about Tom Brady, that it's getting to be difficult to watch Tom Brady
class
at the end.
Like that.
Yeah, you hate to see a guy, kind of reminds me of Willie Mays when he played his last season and he dropped that ball in center field and everybody said, oh, Willie, you're too old.
Yep.
That's what's starting to worry me at Tom Brady. I wasn't really crazy about him returning one more time, but I hope this is the end of it.
I sure hope so.
Yeah, because he is starting. You hate to see a man with his reputation go out this way. It's just something he needs to do a better job.
Watching him and his struggles during the game, and then watching Arizona in general just struggling.
Yeah.
It was a painful game to watch.
Well, that was not the best Sunday night game that the NFL could have shown.
I watched Yellowstone.
Okay. Well, that was probably a good idea, George. But yeah, the NFL, when you have too many games, that's what tends to happen. Well, I got to ask you a question. How was your Christmas holiday?
Very good. Very cold.
Very cold. Yeah. Yeah. It got cold up here too. It was cold up here too. I guess that this happens every 7 years or every 8 years that Christmas falls on a Sunday, which means that then the Monday after feels kind of weird. Like today, the 26th, Monday the 26th, is actually the day that all the banks are closed.
Yeah.
Or all the, you know, the post office is out and all of that. So
all the liquor stores.
Everything seems to be out today. So it's, I guess it happens every 7 years, I guess, or every 8 years, however. But it's always a little strange. And I know for us Catholics who like to go to the midnight mass on the 24th, there is one benefit this year. That is that if you go to the midnight mass on a 24th Saturday, then you don't have to go to the Sunday mass. So that's one bureaucratic advantage that Catholics have over everybody else. Because, you know, all you have to do is go to one. You just do one obligation. You don't have to do Saturday and Sunday. So as I said, it's every 7 or 8 years, however the calendar goes. Well, let's talk a little bit. I know that that I would like to talk to you about the state legislature coming up after the first of the year, and I like to put that in another show because that's a lot of material for us to get over. But I did want to recall, I think you'll remember this, that President Ford and President Truman both died on December 26th, not the same year, of course. President Truman, 1972, and President Ford, 2006. I always found the coincidence there rather interesting, because these were two men who a lot of people used to compare to each other. They were kind of like the accidental presidents. And also another little detail, Gerald Ford went into the House, or was elected to the House in 1946, or the year that Harry Truman was president. So it was just one of these coincidences between these two men, both. As they used to call them, accidental presidents. So I don't know. Do you remember when President Truman died? I
remember
that. I
don't remember too much about President Truman's death.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Bob Hope used to really, really do a routine about him, and he did call him the president by accident. And I do remember when Gerald Ford died. I think one of the moving things about his funeral was that the University of Michigan band played their song because he played football.
Yeah, he did play it. So he was the center, mm-hmm. I believe, at the University of Michigan. And another thing, too, about President Ford's funeral that I remember watching on TV was so many of the members of George W. Bush's administration had a relationship to President Ford.
Yeah.
Starting with Dick Cheney, starting with him, of course, and Rumsfeld and some of the other members of his administration. So a couple of very interesting presidents. I always thought that biography that was written about Truman was fabulous, and Ford was always to me a very interesting character because he never wanted to be president, but he ended up he ended up being president in the most unusual way. The greatest trivia question of all time: who was selected to be vice president, or not selected but accepted? I guess is the right word, to be vice president, who later became president. And the answer, of course, Gerald Ford, who replaced Spiro Agnew, who then replaced Richard Nixon. I mean, to say the least, I do remember that very turbulent time in the history, George. Well, let's talk a little bit about El Paso, Texas. I have a post over at the American Thinker today. You can see it at the American Thinker. And that post is entitled, El Paso Used to Be Such a Beautiful Town. And my reference was to having been to El Paso on business trips a couple of times in December, and how pretty and how colorful and all the lights and the mixing of two cultures, you know, the Mexican culture and the English culture, just sort of creating a very unusual or very different Christmas image. And I loved it. I thought it was absolutely great that those Decembers in El Paso, but it's not that way anymore, George.
No, unfortunately, the border crisis has really, really made it really impacted on the city. There are people everywhere that are living on the street, that are homeless, who are waiting to be moved on by the nonprofit organizations who are funded by the Biden administration. They have such a big backlog that they're not able to move them fast enough. Consequently, people are going to are having to stay on the street. There is a huge effort by churches and other groups to provide blankets and coats for people. Many of the folks, most of them crossed the river and had to stay out in the cold for a while until they got either a change of clothes or they got a blanket or whatnot, which in my opinion has made it really, really dangerous, particularly to the young and the old. The vast majority, for whatever reason, whether it's the cartels telling them or because it's, you know, they feel safer, they're not crossing during the day. They're crossing either early in the early in the evening when the sun has gone down, or they cross real early in the morning before the sun has come up. Consequently, those are really cold times. The other issue that they're facing is that the flu, the respiratory viruses that are going around right now have made the health situation in El Paso that much worse, particularly in the clinics and the hospitals. They're overwhelmed. Yuma, Arizona is also overwhelmed. Laredo has been overwhelmed. And these, are again, these are the results of the Biden administration encouraging people. We have interviewed lots of folks, all of whom have told us that the only reason that they are coming right now is because they know they can get into the United States and stay. They know that they will be given a hearing date, which is right now. I just read a few moments ago that the backlog on the hearing dates is almost 10 years. There is 1.6 million people on the list, and it's getting longer every day because people come in, they introduce themselves to the Border Patrol, they claim asylum, and they are put on the list.
Right. And that's where you would think, George, that the Biden administration would have thought this through and would have said, you know what, why don't we stop right now? Why don't we just close it right now for a year, let's say, and give these cases a chance to get resolved? Because what you're having this, like you say, people are getting on a list. And while they're on this list, George, correct me if I'm wrong, but they cannot work legally, right? Or can they work?
They can't.
Right. So they don't have a green card.
They don't.
Or some kind of a temporary green card while they're waiting.
Now,
so that means they're in the country.
Yeah, there's an effort to try to circumvent that requirement. Whether it's going to be successful or not, particularly under this new Congress,
right?
I don't know, but you know they're not able to do much.
Well, and that's the point. And we see, and I mentioned this because we see some of that at our church. Our church has a pantry that is, of course, for the purpose of helping people in our community. You know, different churches have different pantries, and we try to limit it to a geographic area because otherwise, you know, you run out of food. What can I tell you? And we're getting a lot of people now who've come over, many from Venezuela.
Recent arrivals.
Recent arrivals. And that's what they're basically saying. They cannot pay the rent. They cannot pay the food. If they get a job, it's an illegal type work. I mean, I'm sure they'll find something. I mean, there's lots of people who will hire them.
Yeah.
And for the most part, my
economy is going to be growing like crazy.
Exactly. And my conversations with a couple of them, they're overqualified for whatever job they get. I mean, there's a lady who's a lawyer, another lady who's a dentist. Her husband is an airline pilot. So, I mean, there's all kinds of overqualified people for the jobs that are waiting for them. But that this is where I criticize the Biden administration directly, because they could have said 6 months ago, 9 months ago, we're going to close the border until we get caught up here, until we get these cases at least, more down, at least get the caseload at a more acceptable level. Yeah. Here's the thing, George, that also puzzles me. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what happens is that most of these cases are actually rejected.
Yes.
Most of these asylum requests are rejected because they're economic asylum requests.
Exactly.
Completely different than it was with the Cubans, let's say, when my family came.
Exactly.
Because we were being treated as political people or political refugees or whatever you want to call us. So we were given the benefit of the doubt because we were coming from a communist country. Now, you could argue Venezuela is a communist country, or at least, a left-wing country.
Quasi-communist.
Yeah, I mean, they're not the same way Cuba was, but, they're not the same kind of government, but not exactly the same.
My partner and I have interviewed well over 100 people out at the migrant center. And virtually all of them, except for the Cubans, the few Cubans that we have interviewed, who in most cases refuse to be on camera because they are political refugees. But the vast majority, I'd say 99%, all admit that they are leaving because of the economy.
Right.
That is the problem. And
they would not qualify.
They would not qualify for asylum.
I mean, that's certainly true of the people coming from Haiti. Or the people coming from Central America.
Nicaragua.
The
vast majority of all the people that are coming right now to the United States are economic refugees.
Right. And there is a problem there with the immigration law, because the immigration law is clear, or at least asylum, as I understand it, it's clear that it cannot be economic.
Exactly.
But I mean, the other problem too, George, is most of these countries have, the United States has an embassy in most of these countries. So there is a legal way for them to apply.
Exactly right.
For asylum. It's not, again, people always talk about the Cubans, and the Cubans, yes, I admit that we got some preferential treatment, but it was in the context of the Cold War.
Of the Cold War.
In the US-USSR struggle. And there was no US embassy in Cuba until President Obama put it in there in 2015. So for all those years, when I left Cuba, there was no U.S. embassy. When lots of other people left Cuba, there was no U.S. embassy. And people like to bring up the case of Mariel. Well, Mariel was a problem, but Mariel was 100,000 people in 30 days, and it ended.
Compared to almost 5 million the past 2 years since Biden took it. Right.
I know. So, we're literally, as they say, marching or walking here, a brand new territory. Now, another big controversy, George, is this title or article. I keep saying article, but it's Title 42. Title 42. And the Biden administration had said something about the 27th, meaning tomorrow, that they're going to have something. But have you heard anything about that? Meaning, when I say something, they're going to have a position on Title 42. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, I mean, I listened to what the White House said this morning in their question and answer period. And Jean-Pierre, can't remember her last name.
Right.
She, the White House spokesman.
Right.
She,
spokesperson. Yeah.
But she was very, very frustrated
mm-hmm.
that question came up. she made it sound like there was going to be a some type of decision tomorrow. She alluded to the fact that a federal judge in Texas had put a hold on it, and then they had appealed it to an appeals judge, federal judge in Washington, D.C., who had said that the president had the authority to repeal it. And so they were anticipating another challenge into the Supreme Court. So they were hoping that the Supreme Court will not interfere, as she put it.
Now, but if I understand, it was also Justice Roberts who extended it, I guess, a couple of days. But I mean, the reality, George, and this is a failure of the president and the Congress. Judges should not be in the business of these titles or whatever. Correct. I mean, that's not what judges do. This is a failure of the Biden administration. You can fault Congress if you want to as well. But, you know, Congress has to wait for the president to make the call. And without the president being directly involved, the Congress is just going to, you know, punt this thing. And that is where we are. I mean,
well, you know, again, Congress and the president have been in sync this century only twice. When Obama won, they were in sync. The Democrats were controlled for 2 years. And then recently, this time around, when Biden and the House and the Congress were all in sync, and neither time have they done anything about what they call the broken immigration system.
Right. Yeah, I love that. That's
all they have done is spent huge amounts of money, and then like the $1.7 trillion that they just passed, and screamed and yelled at the Republicans after the fact that the Republicans don't do anything about the immigration issue. You know, I'm sorry, but can't they do something when they're in control?
Well, they cannot, obviously, because as you say, President Obama had 59. This is amazing to me. At one point, he had 59 votes in the Senate. All he needed was one Republican, and he couldn't get the Dream Act through. Mm. And that's because six Democrats voted against it. One of them being Manchin and the fellow from Montana, Tester.
Right.
So you know, I don't know whether the Congress can do anything, but this is to me a moment that calls for presidential leadership.
Yeah.
And what I would like to see is the president of the United States go on television tonight and say, look, we got a mess down there. It's not fair what is happening to the city of El Paso, what is happening to their hospitals and so on, to their cities. And we are going to shut down the border for a year, and nobody can come in without papers.
Oh, that, you know, that'll be.
But that would be the solution.
That'll be the day. Castro this morning, Congressman Castro here in San Antonio, not Fidel, but Congressman Joaquin Castro here in San Antonio today, criticized severely in real strong language, sailor's language. Criticized the governor, Greg Abbott, for busing illegal aliens up to
the vice president's house,
up to the vice president's house, and to New York. However, what's amazing to me is how, first of all, the mayor of New York, instead of saying don't send any more, why don't you close the border, he's demanding more money. Okay,
that's right.
Demanding more money. Secondly, Castro, the congressman here, has made it very, very clear that the border cannot be closed. However, more money is needed to support these folks as, you know, after they come in. The other thing that's been happening is that the congresswoman, Escobar, down in El Paso,
right? Yeah.
In El Paso, has been very, very critical of not letting enough people cross the river. She has been upset that people are having to wait in Mexico, because it's too cold and they are in the elements, Well, once they cross, it's the same thing because there's nothing prepared over here. Right. I mean, it's so illogical how these people are looking at this problem. I mean, it's so illogical.
Yeah, and that was, in my opinion, I always felt, and I've had conversations with friends in El Paso who are just exhausted. I mean, they just simply cannot take any more people. I mean, they on one hand, they are saying, we sympathize with them, but on the other hand, look, our pockets can only go so far.
Exactly.
Our resources. But one of the beauties I always felt of Remain in Mexico, to me, the beauty of Remain in Mexico is that if you tell people in Haiti or Venezuela or wherever they're coming from, if you say to them ahead of time, you're going to have to wait in Mexico, they're not going to come.
They're going
to
come.
They're not going to come because they don't want to wait in Mexico.
We have seen that. We have seen that. So how do you take care of this border problem right now? You reinstate the stay in Mexico problem.
And that's, now, again, and this is the problem that the judges, because it gets into a gray area here as to what a judge can do. But I don't think the judges can reinstate Article or Remain in Mexico, because that is something that only the president, I'm assuming the Congress could do. The Congress could pass a law that says Remain in Mexico, and then the president can sign it or veto it. But right now, I don't believe that Justice Roberts, I'd say, or the Supreme Court can issue a majority opinion saying you got
to
reinstate it.
The court is not supposed to establish or legislate policy. I mean,
my point. That's exactly right.
That is the role of the legislature and the president. However,
that is exactly right.
However,
right,
they don't want to do that for political reasons, because they want to keep this political ball going. Well, this is what you've got.
Right. That is the problem. You're exactly right.
Is what is happening. I mean, we are all concentrating on what is happening of people, the numbers of people crossing the border. However, once they are across, we need to start concentrating on what is happening to our communities, like in El Paso. What is happening in El Paso, I guarantee, will happen sooner or later in Dallas. It'll happen in Memphis. It'll happen in St. Louis. It's happening here in San Antonio already. We've got homeless, illegal aliens living all over the place because there's no method of moving them along.
Right, and there's two big consequences. You were talking about healthcare or the hospitals, and the other one is the public schools. You start putting all these kids in public schools. The public schools are obviously supported by property taxes, which means there are going to be shortages of, I mean, they simply, the taxes cannot be raised anymore, the property taxes. So it becomes an unmanageable, unsustainable, I like that word, unsustainable situation. And that's what you mentioned, Yuma, Arizona. I had heard that too, that there are clinics in Yuma, Arizona that are simply, you know, they can't take any more people. And I'm assuming.
And sadly, the answer right now, again, getting back to Congressman Castro here, is not only to open the border more so more people can come in and be brought in from the cold, so to speak, but the answer is also to provide complete and total amnesty to all these folks.
Right. And that's kind of the objective, I guess.
You
flood the zone, and then you make the amnesty almost inevitable. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I kind of, you know, to kind of wrap it up today, I kind of see more confusion ahead. I just see more confusion. I don't see a solution anytime, because I don't have any confidence in the Biden administration. So I don't see a solution. I don't see a president, you know, dealing with the problem. So what I see is more chaos, George.
I do too. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And I wonder at times if that's not the idea in the mind of these folks.
Don't underestimate these people. I mean, you may be right about that. This may be part of the objective. Well, George, the Cowboys, just one quick note here. The Cowboys are playing Thursday night, and they have to win the last two, and I guess Philadelphia has to split the next two, and then they end up in a tie, and then they go into the tiebreakers. I'm not betting on that, but that's technically what could happen, George.
Well, the tiebreaker would be difficult because Dallas won here and lost up there, so You know, I think it's going to come down to points and strength of schedule and all this sort of good stuff.
Right, all that good stuff. But I have a feeling that the Eagles will make it in.
Yeah.
And then I guess the Cowboys will be one of the four wild cards. And maybe we'll get to play Tampa Bay. Maybe
be honest with you, I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's a big fear because the way that Brady plays,
right,
it seems like you can be beating him all day long, and then he just pulls a rabbit out of the hat at the last moment. So.
Yeah, and I also, from
and
emotion.
And we would be playing them, and Dallas would be playing them in Tampa Bay.
In Tampa Bay, that's right. And I guess a lot of fans across the country don't want to see Brady lose his last game or go out that way. So we have that emotional burden to overcome as well, you know.
Get beaten up by the Dallas front line.
Right, but now you've got this game is on Thursday. The Cowboys game is on Thursday. So this schedule, this NFL schedule here at the end because of these holidays has been messed up quite a bit. So maybe the next time we speak, George, which would be after the first of the year, maybe we will say NFC champions, Dallas Cowboys.
That would be.
You want to bet me a Coke on that?
Well,
because that's all I bet. I never bet any more than a Diet Coke or a coffee. I'm very easy to bet with because I only bet a Diet Coke or a coffee. I don't bet anything heavier than
we
that.
We can also bet on a hometown team there, TCU.
They're
looking good.
They're looking very good. They're looking actually very good. They're actually, yes, you're right. That would be fun. It's always fun to see TCU make it, especially now that the Aggies and the Longhorns and some of the other big names.
BYU Cougars beat SMU on the last play of the game?
Yes, that's right. That was quite a game. That's quite a game. Well, George, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
And we will see you after the New Year's break, and we'll talk a little bit about the legislative session. And I have a funny feeling that this immigration topic is not going
away. It's not
going to
go away.
So I'm sure it'll be part of our conversation. But Happy New Year to you. Thank you,
thank
as
you.
Always,
you too.
For joining us. And my best to you. And by the way, San Antonio is also a lovely city this time of the year. I remember being there a couple of times for the
it's
holidays.
Very fattening.
Oh, it's beautiful. The river walk. I mean, everything about it is just absolutely beautiful. This time of the year, the lights, and it's just great. It's just an absolutely great city to spend this time of the year in. Thank you, George. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. All right. Our good friend, George Rodriguez from San Antonio, we refer to him as our conservative from South Texas. That's how we refer to him. George, of course, is a public speaker, an author, and a veteran of working with the federal government for many years. But this problem in El Paso is a mess. That's all I can tell you. And I don't expect this administration to fix it because I just don't think they have the courage, frankly, to stand up to the immigration activists. And that's why I think this problem is just going to get worse. I hate to be a pessimist. I would be happy to come here in my next video and say that President Biden has decided to fix the problem. But I don't see that because, again, I think the great failure of the Biden administration is the way that he basically gave in to the immigration activists on the border and to really the fanatic climate change people, not climate change itself, but the fanatic environmentalists, the way he gave in with respect to fossil fuels. I mean, look, we all want a clean atmosphere, but we don't want to kill our economy, which is what, unfortunately, a lot of these fanatics want to do. Again, thank you very much for watching us tonight, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.